This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Event at ifest.org. Don't miss the Houston International Festival April 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th. Go to ifest.org and get your tickets today. This is KPFT Houston.
Are you sick of regular radio?
Radio?
Oh, I love the radio.
We love radio here at KPFT. KPFT's youth program has a new show called Whippersnapper Radio on Saturday nights that's full of surprises.
Music!
News!
Prizes!
Our hosts and reporters put together shows every week to educate and entertain you. So listen to Whippersnapper Radio for music, news, and more for local youth by local youth.
Saturday nights from 9 till 9:30.
This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And Brian, what do we have on the show this evening?
We have some hop, hop, hop into springtime fun with the Bunnies on the Bayou.
Hey, that sounds like fun.
And we have the owner and proprietor of the Houston Buyers Club, Fred Walters.
Fred Walters. Uh-huh.
Yes.
He's going to be here to talk about how their mission statement is to improve the quality of life for people with health.
He just does so much good over there.
Things.
Yes.
He's got that huge store over there with all that good stuff.
Full of stuff and full of information.
Yeah, exactly. And they put on little programs and they can help you with all kinds
of
things.
And he's going to talk about a program that they have this weekend.
Oh, okay, good. And, of course, we also have News Wrap and our regular features from This Way Out. And I'm sure that we'll find other things to talk about in the course of 2 hours.
Well, and J.D. wanted to remind our listeners that he will be featured on Audiophile tonight.
Oh, okay. Good.
That's wonderful.
He messaged me on Facebook. And so, J.D., here's a shout-out to you.
And all of you out there, don't forget that you can become one of our friends on Facebook.
Absolutely.
And you can also become one of the friends of KPFT by making a donation anytime online or anytime during normal business hours by just calling
Absolutely.
Up and saying that you want to donate.
And please, when you do that, mention that this is for Queer Voices, so we'll get credit for your donation.
So I think we're set up to talk about Bunnies on the Bayou.
Well, it's been called the Houston's largest outdoor cocktail party, and it has been 30 years in the making. I understand this is the 30th anniversary. Gosh, I wasn't even alive when it started. No, I'm just kidding. No. In the studio tonight, we have Presidente Vince. How do you say your last name?
Flickinger.
Vince Flickinger. And then Jacques Berger, or Jack Berger, as he's known to his local local people. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So are y'all ready for Easter?
We're always ready. It's just the problem is when it gets closer, we're maybe not so ready. But we're always very excited. And this weekend was, you know, if it's a taste of things to come on Easter Sunday, we are very excited if the weather works
out. Well, I was telling a lot of people I hope that we have this weather for bunnies because I know y'all are very sensitive to weather issues.
Yeah, our attendance is greatly affected by the weather. If it's sunny, it's going to be fantastic. If it's rainy or wet, we'll have a tendency. It just gets slightly affected.
Right. Okay, so if there are people out there that live under a rock and really don't know what the Bunnies on the Bayou is all about, please tell those who may not know.
Okay, well, in a nutshell, Bunnies on the Bayou started out in 1979 as a group of friends getting together to celebrate a birthday party. The party was a huge success, and the next year people were wanting to know, you're going to do it again. Well, they did it again, and it came to be known as another party and another type of charity, and you had to bring a can of food to get in, and over time, it became an official nonprofit. The name was officially changed to Bunnies on the Bayou. I don't know if anybody knows its other...
Nefarious, yes. But alternate name, but yes. We can't really...
Rhymes with...
No.
We want to stay on the air.
Okay.
Yes.
Like best friend.
Yes. And so this was in 1979, so kind of before HIV/AIDS.
Right, and once the party started getting hit, a big hit was becoming well known, HIV/AIDS hit. And as it became an official nonprofit, one of its mantras was to assist the community and other nonprofit organizations. Though our directive isn't necessarily to direct all our monies towards nonprofits that focus on HIV/AIDS, that is a big part of what we donate to. But since then, the party's evolved. It's gotten bigger. It's gotten more sophisticated in its appearance. A couple years ago, we added Camp Bunny, which has totally changed the feel of the party at various levels. And we're very excited.
What is Camp Bunny, for those who may not know?
Camp Bunny is where individuals or organizations can purchase a tent. And when you purchase a tent, you're an official sponsor, and you get a private bar within your tent, and you are allowed to decorate your tent within some certain guidelines and restrictions.
It's sort of the ultra VIP level.
Yeah.
We have a VIP in addition to the general admission. The VIP folks obviously get the higher caliber of cocktail party experience and the nicer restrooms, etc. But the Camp Bunny takes it to another level and really allows you to have a special treatment within the confines of the party.
And it's a lot of fun to go and tour like each of the Camp Bunnies, because each has its own little theme, and then some have little costumes, and they're all provocative. And
yeah, there's a lot of take on. A lot of them want to know what our theme is for the year, and a lot of them take it and run with it. And this year, from what we understand, there's a lot of excited people, and they're ready to roll.
Well, what's the theme this year?
Well, because we're 30 years, the Roman numeral for 30 is a triple X. So that's this year's theme is triple X. Bunny on bunny action.
I love your theme, and I love your ad.
Our ad is 5 hours of nonstop triple X bunny on bunny action.
And we'd like to thank our friends at Douthat Design for helping us put this together.
Yeah, they do a fabulous job in assisting us in many aspects of our advertising, graphics, and signage, and things like that.
Very good. Now, do you have the list of beneficiaries that y'all are raising money for?
Yeah, sure.
Just put you on the spot, Rob.
We'll alternate. I'll start first. AIDS Foundation, Houston.
Whoop, whoop. That's a good one.
Well, Jack started without me, but... AIDS Foundation. Okay, Bering Omega Community Services.
The Center for AIDS Information and Advocacy.
Colt 45's Houston.
Community Endowment Fund.
The Foundation for AIDS Israel.
Lazarus House.
Legacy Community Health Services.
ICOH Space City Empire.
And Pride Houston.
Yeah, so these are some really interesting ones. We have some old familiar favorites. Usually in the October range, we ask for proposals from the different nonprofits. And if they complete a simple form and provide some other financial information, one of our committees will then go about the process of screening the applications and make recommendations to the board. And this year, one of the brand new ones is the Foundation for AIDS Israel, which doesn't sound like a local charity, but...
It is a local charity, and they came to us wanting to help them aid in funding a documentary that they're filming on people living long-term with HIV/AIDS, and the fact that HIV/AIDS as a disease,
it's for 6 or 7 people that are chronicled that have had HIV and AIDS for 20 plus years.
Right.
So it's sort of like a forgotten part of what's going on. It's sex, pills, and
lies.
Sex, lies, and pills. That's really kind of a neat project.
Interesting. I hadn't heard of that one. So
And check your Outsmart upcoming issues. We'll have a feature on that.
That's a very fine periodical there, Jack.
Thank you very much.
So when is Bunnies?
Bunnies is Easter Sunday, April 12th.
New time this year.
New time, and our official time from here on out, because of the time change being officially changed last year, we will always be 1 to 6 until some routine causes it to change.
Until you change it again.
So after you've enjoyed the fun from the night prior...
Good plug.
Thank you. After you go to Jungle and then go to church, you can come to Bunnies and spend the afternoon with us.
Now, does Bunnies on the Bayou produce Jungle? I get that question a lot.
No, and neither does Jungle Produce Bunnies on the Bayou. So they're two distinct groups.
But friends.
We're friends. Bayou City Boys Club produces Jungle Weekend, which starts on Thursday and ends Sunday evening. And Bunnies on the Bayou produces Bunnies on the Bayou, which is our single event, and it's on Easter Sunday. We coordinate times and we talk about things, but we're actually two distinct groups.
Two distinct groups, yes.
Yeah, we took our winter off this year to really focus on our 30th anniversary, but for those of you who have enjoyed Snow Bunnies, we appreciate your attendance at that. We have a summer project that hadn't gotten off the ground yet called Bunnies in Heat.
I'm sorry. I just thought
they're very serious. This is fundraising for the community.
That's right. But if you're going to fundraise,
just the names. Why not have a clever name?
The sky's the limit with bunnies, and I think we see that with our advertising every year, from Party with Your Peeps and
Pack Your Basket.
It always has like a little twist.
Yeah, there's always a little double entendre there.
Yes,
the whole eye candy thing really works well for us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, in a typical year with good weather, how many people do you expect?
Last year, being an atypical year because we had good weather.
Right.
We had over around 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. I think
that's amazing.
Which is a great turnout for that area. It fills it up just enough. And I think last year it maybe felt even a little more crowded because people came, but they didn't leave.
Right.
Some ran across the street, got a bite to eat, and came right back. So sometimes people will come early and leave, or come late and finish out the party. People came and they stayed the whole time because the weather was nice and the drinks were flowing and we had a great time. And by the way, it's open bar.
Right.
$25 in advance, $30 at the gate.
Please have breakfast or brunch or lunch first, because we do not serve food.
Now, where is it held? Have we said that?
No, it didn't.
500 Texas Avenue in Fish Plaza, right in front of the Wortham.
Oh, okay.
So it's right there by the bayou, and
right.
It kind of has the steps, and everybody can stand and model like
right.
They perfectly do.
And if you haven't had enough bunny partying, immediately afterward, you walk across the street to the Rock Bar Mosaic, and they'll be hosting our official after party. And just in case it rains,
yes,
they are the rain venue.
Don't even say that.
Yeah, we won't even say that.
No. Now, what time is the after party?
It wouldn't dare rain.
No. It starts actually
at 6:01.
Well, actually, there's a little more of an overlap. I think it's been moved to 5.
Okay.
So there's like an hour overlap, and they're going to have Crystal Waters performing. So,
no
that
way.
That
sounds
pretty
like
exciting.
A fun afternoon.
Is she going to do 100% pure love?
I hope so. Well,
oh
she does,
God.
And it wouldn't be Crystal Waters
oh
performing. So
I'm so there.
Yeah, I know. We were surprised too. We're like, what? Thank you. Y'all got her.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But they were excited to host us once again, and the fact that they're just right across the street lends it to being the perfect after party for us.
Are you going to have the same DJ as last year?
No.
We've gone retro.
Yeah, we've gone retro, and we've brought back an old friend, an old member, and a former multi-year DJ. Dan Metter will be performing this year.
I'm going to applaud for that.
And, yeah, there's a lot of people very excited that we're bringing Dan back.
Well, he also can control the weather for us.
Yes,
yes, exactly.
Ah.
And Channel 11, he has that little button he can push.
Right.
And he better push it a lot.
But we did a little search, and we had some great candidates, and we just thought for the 30th anniversary that Dan made a lot of sense, and
wow,
he was gracious enough to come back and help us out.
That's a great, great choice. Now, are you feeling the pinch of the economy, or are you seeing that yet? Or?
We've felt it in a different way. A lot of our corporate sponsorship is a little more difficult this year, but where we've been able to make it up is it seems like individuals have realized that and have come out. So I would say our individual sponsorship has elevated itself, whereas some of the corporate sponsorship is kind of, mm-hmm. you know, diminished. And it's not so much that they don't want to, it's just the guys who are normally able to make the decisions have been put on hold.
Yeah.
And they all want to do it, but
I think the whole country is just kind of holding their breath, waiting
right.
to, you know, kind of for us to come back up.
And one of the neat things is we have great friends at Silver Eagle Distributors and
oh, yeah.
the Bud Light brand. So they have done almost everything we've asked for, from signage to, you know, the obvious product inclusion. But they're mm-hmm. just terrific to work with, and they're as strong as with us as they have ever been.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's great to hear.
They're mm-hmm. a huge sponsor in the community, and we thank them.
Yeah, a lot of our sponsors this year have been for numerous years and continue to support us, and we're very thankful for that.
Now, are you needing volunteers for the day event, or?
We're still in need of some volunteers. So if you're still interested in volunteering, I know there's some second. We have two shifts, so it's.
So what would the volunteer do other than look?
Well, a lot of volunteers have fun because you can man a bar and act as a bartender.
Okay.
Or you can work the front gate, or you can help set up, or you help tear down. But those are pretty much the basic volunteers. Is
right.
Front gate.
I'm sure everybody has to be of age.
You have to be 21 or older.
Good point.
We have sponsored some groups in the past where their focus was those who were not of age, and so we kept them at the front gate, and they weren't allowed into the party. But they had no problems. They enjoyed working the front gate and enjoying themselves.
We've had a bunch of different volunteer groups that have manned the same bar for years and years. The tips that they earn go into the big pool and help us, you know,
right.
give
like,
more of the monies to our charitable groups.
Yeah, like Colt 45's manages our big bar on top, and last year they weren't even a beneficiary, but as a group they came out and manned the bar, the whole party, and really pushed people to give the tips, because those tips all go towards all the beneficiaries. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, they were pretty awesome.
And working the bar is fun, I'm sure.
Yeah, they all have a blast.
Now, if I wanted more information, where would I go?
www.bunniesonthebayou.org. And you can even buy tickets online. There's a substantial discount if you purchase your ticket in advance.
Mm-hmm. It's $25 in advance, $30 day of. There's also VIP tickets, which are $125, and they can also be purchased at M2M Fashion on Montrose.
And what are the perks of being VIP? I think you said
VIP. Well, you get a private VIP area. There's an upgraded bar with upgraded liquor. There are
the boys are cuter.
The boys. I mean, the bathrooms are.
I don't know. We have cute boys. I think cute
They're
boys.
They're going to be arguing one. About that and on that. But there's separate bathrooms, because sometimes if the weather's warm and a lot of people are drinking, those lines can grow pretty quickly.
Yes. That alone is worth being VIP.
Quick access to the restrooms. And then you get to go into the VIP area, and you get to see a bigger, you know, broad spectrum of the view and things.
It's a nice little perch, I say, because it's kind of above the bayou and kind of that.
Yeah,
and
that gazebo,
gazebo type thing, and you can kind of look out and spot your friends and wave to them.
And it's a great way to make a donation to some great groups. I think
absolutely.
That's the biggest part of it.
It's a great way to give money. But there's perks,
right?
And you know what? We appreciate our general admission folks. We have so many experiences of people letting us keep the change and coming with an hour to go and still paying the full price because they like what it
sometimes
stands
they.
For.
They come and they give us $40, and instead of waiting for their change, it's like, keep it, you know.
A lot of people wandering around downtown, you know, not even related to the gay community. Just
grandmothers.
You know, I love that it's like on Easter Sunday and like this big, massive gay party. And all the people are driving from like Easter services, and they're like, what's going on?
Yeah, we've had last year we had these two grandmothers that had come to something that
was a quilting show or something,
and they're asked, what is this? And we were very honest. We said, you know, it is a party that supports our community, which is the gay community, and, you know, you pay to get in, and it's open bar, and you get to meet people and make friends, and they gave us money and walked right on in. And
oh,
now,
my gosh.
And this was like at 4 o'clock. An hour later, they were leaving and said they had the best time of their life, and it was very funny because, you know,
like, Mildred, why are all the men shirtless?
Well, I think that's what drew them in.
Growing wild on the beach.
Exactly. Well, even at that age, they like to look at pretty bodies.
Oh, yeah, they enjoyed themselves.
Pretty bunnies, I mean, excuse me.
Now, how does one become a bunny?
Usually, you become a bunny because you know somebody who is a bunny.
Okay, so you got to know somebody.
Not necessarily. Last year, we actually put a call out for people who were interested, and we had a little social, and I think people, those who attended, you know, didn't realize how much you actually have to do. It's not just
it's not just a little club.
Not just a little party.
And so we had some join from that, and we had some that really appreciated what we do, and then even appreciated it more once they found out how much time and effort it takes.
And you get to ride the cool float at the parade.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they decided that they'd just rather be sponsors than members. So we had a mixture of people that showed up, but some actually joined bunnies.
Well, that's okay. If you don't want to volunteer,
there's the financial.
Money works.
Yeah.
We will take help in any way, shape, or form that we can get it.
Now, how many members do you have currently?
We currently have 25 members, 20... I'm going to call them regular members, and then we have 5 emeritus members. And emeritus is if you've been a bunny for 5 consecutive years in good standing, you have the option for the next year to be emeritus, which means you don't have to do anything.
But you still have to pay.
But you still have to pay. And you can option out of emeritus and come active again or go back in once you've hit that point. But that's, we've had some people become emeritus and then take a year mm-hmm. off and then come back. And so for us, it opens up a lot of people who've been members for many years to kind of come back into the group and still even attend meetings and stuff if they choose, and give us a lot of background information on how things used to be done or why they did it.
That's probably a very valuable resource.
It is. That resource sometimes comes in very handy.
Now, are there any special events or things you're planning during Bunnies for the 30th anniversary?
Well, the Flyboys of Flag Troop Houston will be performing, and from what I hear, they are excited. They said it's going to be spectacular.
Let's just say it always is.
It always is.
They'll be on the
water. Even more spectacular. Yeah, they're going to be. They're planning something, and I know there's things they're going to be on top of it, but it's going to cascade down the waterfall, and they're performing on the waterfall. So it'll be pretty impressive. And I think when they do perform on the waterfall, it allows so many more people to see them. Mm-hmm. And I think they just see it's going to be great.
Yeah, and then the rest just sort of happens. I mean, it's really just about the party and just people enjoying the music and getting to see some friends that they haven't seen. Folks come in costume from time to time.
Right.
Costumes fall off from time to time. It's just fun. I mean, it's just about having a good time and just taking a break from, the normal stress of life and just relaxing and having a good time.
That's what makes Bunnies Bunnies. It's just very casual, and it brings all varieties of people that make up our community together. And we actually talked about, do we need a special performance? Do we need any of that? And what makes Bunnies Bunnies is the people who attend. So the more people who attend, the better it is.
Especially if it's 80 degrees, though.
Yeah. Now is it strictly guys and old grandmothers? What sort of people are welcome?
Everybody is welcome. Everybody's welcome. It's open bar, so you're guaranteed to have a good time. And if you don't have a good time, we will make you have a good time. But everybody's welcome. We've had married couples who live downtown hear the music and want to know what it is, so they come over and check it out and come in. Friends or relatives of people who are attending, bring their family and friends who came into town. So it varies greatly.
Yeah, and we have lots of ladies show up depending on either they're affiliated with the charitable groups or whatever, they have a reason.
I would say a strong lesbian contingent that shows up. It's mostly gay men. Let's be honest. Maybe.
Well, most of these parties are, but
yeah. But I mean, there's some eye candy.
That all the other people get a chance to come to. That's not being
absolutely.
We're not excluding anyone.
No.
I want to make sure that you understand.
It's a very welcoming environment, I would say.
Yeah. Well, the only way to make more bunnies is to have some boys and some girls.
Right.
Exactly. Unless you clone them.
You could clone. Know that.
Yeah, that's how bunnies do.
My mother didn't tell me any of that stuff.
Really.
The bunnies and the bees.
The bunnies and the bees.
Bunnies and the bees. They didn't tell me about the bunnies and the bees.
Now, what sort of promotions are y'all having? Any sort of promotions for this?
No.
No.
We'll be at M2M.
Well, we'll be selling tickets the Saturday before at M2M.
Do you have most of your ticket sales the weekend before?
Most of our ticket sales happen the weekend before and the day of, because for us it's weather. People wait till the weather, and there are some people, they don't care if it's 30 degrees and raining, they're going to come, and they buy their tickets advance. But for everybody else, it's weather related. So,
well, if you're a VIP, you've already bought your ticket.
Yeah, probably. Most.
So,
and if you have a tent, you don't have to worry about it.
Those people are locked in. So.
Yeah.
I remember the one year it was really cold, and the poor Flyboys were wearing their little skimpy.
Oh, yeah, that was about 5 years ago. Yeah. I think it was Bunnies 26, and it was like 50-something degrees.
Yeah, and those poor bunnies were like in their little skimpy short shorts, and
we had people show up in shorts or no shirts, and I'm like, are y'all cold? They're like, it's bunnies. You're not supposed to wear a shirt to play.
They've invested so much in their little short shorts.
That's right. Yeah. So.
Now, how did y'all get involved in Bunnies?
A friend of mine was a member of Bunnies and asked me to join? And I said, no, no, well, and then asked me again the next year, and I said, no, and then asked me again, and I said, oh, what the heck? And so I joined, and had a great time. I enjoyed all the efforts that we put into it, and then just seeing the responses of the different charities and beneficiaries when they get the check and where that money goes. And, you know, that when we have our check presentation day, you know, it's extremely emotional, especially when some of the smaller nonprofits receive a check that keeps them in existence.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you notice, a lot of the nonprofits have started to disappear, and the ones that have remained have grown larger. So
it's definitely kind of weeding out all the nonprofits.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was a little different. It was part of my coming out process. I came out very late in life.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so I was just taking a job at Outsmart and was looking for other opportunities to get involved in the community. And a good friend of mine, Jeff Caldwell, took me to my first Bunny's party, and I was just head on a swivel.
It's kind of overwhelming, I think.
Yeah.
It's overload.
Yeah. And it was and for a non-drinker, it's much easier to fit in behind the scenes than in the scene. So
that conjures an image. You know, you swivel ahead.
Yeah, it was
there's a lot of eye candy, I would say.
And so
a lot of display of the
milk. It took me one whole Bunny's to decide I wanted to be part of the process.
I can remember the first Bunny's party that I went to.
Well, tell us.
And I was very young at the time.
You're still young.
You're still young.
Well, thank you so much. But this, I'm talking a long time ago.
Okay. Well, it couldn't have been longer than
30. Can't be longer than 30 years.
You know, back before dinosaurs had feathers. And, yeah.
What was it called then?
I can't say.
Oh, okay.
Bunny best friend forever.
That's right. And
you've got the button to bleep it out.
No. We're a nonprofit.
But I was very young and inexperienced in things that go on in the gay community, and I came across these 7-foot-tall drag queens with huge hair and beards, wearing high heels, and, you know, large, open, frilly sundresses with a lot of chest hair. I was not well. I was shocked. I was...
You're like, oh, Dorothy, we've left Kansas.
Yeah, not anywhere near Kansas, no.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think 2 years ago we had a bunch of leather daddies show up in full leather regalia with black bunny ears on.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, my
yes.
God, it was so funny. I think everybody just loved it, and they had a blast. I mean, there they were.
So we should encourage our listeners to dress in costume.
Yes. That's
and leave their pets home.
Yeah.
No pets.
Yeah. No pets are allowed. We've had a pink pig or blue poodle and...
Unless it's a two-legged,
yeah.
And we have a variety of drag queens that come out on an annual basis and support us, and we love them. But man, when it's 80 degrees and the high sun, whew.
I remember when you had Lady Bunny, DJ Lady Bunny,
yeah.
And it was so hot because y'all had moved it.
Yeah,
and
she melted a little.
And her face literally just like fell off. I was sweating, and I'm like, I'm not wearing full foundation.
Yeah, we kind of pushed her under the bridge so that she would have some shade, but it was still warm.
It was right there by the bayou, the moisture is coming up.
It's good for the skin.
Absolutely. That's why we're also young looking.
Exactly.
It's all this minute. So, Easter weekend. It's a big weekend in Houston. There's a lot of things going on.
Yes.
If somebody woke up the other day and doesn't know when Easter is, what's the date?
April 12th.
April 12th.
Sunday, April 12th.
Sunday.
And yes. What's the time again?
1 p.m. to 6 p.m.
And this is the 30th annual.
Yes.
Right. And we thank everyone who's been there in the past and hope that we get a good crowd out this year.
Yes.
And there's a after party at
Rock Bar Mosaic.
And then...
We have to say the DJ because I actually know him.
DJ is?
Is it not...
I don't think they've announced it yet.
Oh, they haven't? Oh, okay.
Okay, well, then we won't talk about that.
We won't talk about that? I thought you already said his name.
No, well, no. Crystal Waters is going to perform.
Perform. Okay.
And Dan Metter is the DJ at the party.
At the main
event. I don't know who's doing the...
Oh, that, okay, that's where it was. Anyway. And you can get tickets in advance by going to...
www.bunniesonthebayou.org or M2M Fashion on Montrose.
Okay. Or you can just buy tickets at the gate.
Right. Yeah, tickets are available at the gate.
If you're willing.
No.
If you want to wait till see what the weather's going to
do. No, don't be like that. Don't be a late bunny.
Yeah. See, and also, last year...
Well, you need to know whether you're going to wear your ears or not.
Yeah, but you don't want to be a hair late.
Oh, that's good.
But I'm hurting.
Okay, we're going to be pulled off the air because of that one comment.
That's.
Are you a good bunny or a bad bunny?
Oh, these are bad bunnies.
I'm always a good bunny.
Good bunny. All right.
Good at being bad bunny.
Have we missed anything that you guys want to let us know? I know this is a great cause, a great event. It's going to be a heck of a party like it has been for 29 years.
It's a cornerstone in Houston GLBT. Yeah.
And if I can, I just want real quick thank our sponsors. We're presented by Bud Light. The gold sponsors are Douthat Design, the
Marriott Courtyard,
Outsmart Magazine, and then our silver sponsors are the Macy's Foundation,
Ziggy's Healthy Grill, Flyboys of Flag Troop Houston, and Signature Media.
All right. Thank you, boys. Great. We will see you on Easter Sunday.
We really appreciate
April
it.
Thank 12th, you for having us. Sunday. See you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. This is Queer Voices.
And I'm Michelle Pleasant with News Wrap, a summary of some of the news interaffecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 28, 2009. According to media reports citing a Justice Ministry official late this week, Japan will allow its gay and lesbian citizens to marry foreign same-gender partners in jurisdictions where it's legal. The government must issue a certificate, which up until now it has refused to do for gays and lesbians, stating that a person is single and of legal age before any Japanese citizen can marry outside the country. The change will allow Japanese gays and lesbians to legally marry their Dutch, Canadian, Spanish, Belgian, or South African same-gender partners in those countries, as well as in the U.S. states of Connecticut and Massachusetts. Taiga Ishikawa of the lesbian gay support group Peer Friends called the government move one step forward. While there are no laws against private consensual adult homosexual acts in the culturally conservative country and no specific ban on gay and lesbian unions, same-gender marriage is not legally recognized in Japan. France's Senate has voted to recognize British lesbi-gay civil partnerships, according to a report this week by PinkNews.com. Britain recognizes French unions, known as pacts of civil solidarity, but France has yet to reciprocate. British couples in civil partnerships who live in France have to pay heavy inheritance taxes of 60% if one of them dies there. French couples in PACs don't have to pay such taxes. The bill will next be heard in France's National Assembly, where supporters believe it will pass. The Associated Press reports that Serbian lawmakers narrowly approved an anti-discrimination law this week that covers race, religion, and sexual orientation, among other categories. The move is part of government reforms designed to win favor with the European Union. The legislation was strongly opposed by the Serbian Orthodox Church, which convinced the government to withdraw the proposal to consider its objection to the inclusion of sexual orientation. The government made no major changes when it then reintroduced the measure. The legislation was considered to be crucial to Serbian citizens being able to travel without visas to the 27 EU member nations. The bill passed with a slim majority of 127 votes in favor to 59 against, one more than was needed for passage in the 250-member parliament. 64 deputies failed to vote on the measure. The new law in the socially conservative country also establishes a special state representative to monitor possible discrimination and outlines punitive measures.
LGBT-related measures were also on the agenda in several U.S. state legislatures this week, particularly in New England, perhaps the most queer-friendly region in the country. The New Hampshire House of Representatives narrowly approved a marriage equality bill, expanding on a civil unions law passed only last year, which provided all state benefits of marriage except the name. The current measure had originally failed by one vote, but a few legislators reconsidered, leading to its passage by a vote of 186 to 179. Its future is said to be uncertain in the democratically controlled state Senate, however, and Democratic Governor John Lynch, who signed the civil unions bill last year, is on record opposing same-gender marriage, though he's yet to announce a formal position on the bill. More than 600 New Hampshire couples have entered into civil unions since the law took effect in 2008. The current bill would change the name from civil union to marriage.
The Vermont Senate overwhelmingly voted 26-4 this week to enact marriage equality in that state.
It was the first in the U.S. to create civil unions for same-gender couples in 2000, but activists have been pushing for full marriage equality for the past few years. The current bill still needs to be considered by the democratically controlled state house, but Republican Governor Jim Douglas has already announced that he'll veto the bill if it reaches his desk. House Speaker Shap Smith called the veto announcement premature, charging that it undermines our democratic system of government. About 300 people protested the governor at the state house, vowing to push legislators to override a veto.
A marriage equality bill has almost 60 co-sponsors in the Maine legislature. Democratic Governor John Baldacci, who's Roman Catholic, is on record as opposed to the concept, although he has yet to take an official position on the measure.
But civil unions legislation that would have given Hawaii's same-gender couples all the rights of marriage but the name died in the state Senate this week. A full vote could have overcome a 3-3 tie vote in committee, but only six senators supported the move, nine votes short of what was required. 18 senators had previously announced their support for the bill, but were said to have bowed to the will of Senate President Colleen Hanabusa, who opposed it. The state house approved the measure by a 33-17 vote in February. Right-wing religious groups claimed credit for derailing the bill. They said they had already been lobbying Republican Governor Linda Lingle to veto the bill if it passed in the legislature. She did not publicly state her official position on the measure. U.S. federal law does not recognize civil unions or same-gender marriages.
Delaware already defines marriage as exclusively heterosexual, but supporters of a proposed constitutional ban worried that state courts would overturn existing law. The state Senate, however, defeated a constitutional same-gender marriage ban this week. Opponents said the measure was unnecessary and that discrimination should not be part of the state constitution. The Senate voted 11-9 against the bill, which required a 3/5 majority to advance. Meanwhile, the Delaware State House passed a bill outlawing discrimination based on sexual orientation in housing, employment, and public accommodations. A similar anti-bias measure has passed the House three times before, but died in a Senate committee each time. Proponents say a change in Senate rules this year could make it easier to bring the bill before the full Senate.
It wasn't that long ago that a bill or ballot measure to restrict LGBT rights in the U.S. would win easy passage, especially in southern states. But a law that would have prohibited adoption or foster parenting by any person cohabiting with a sexual partner outside of a marriage that is valid in Kentucky has died in that state's legislature. Kentucky law denies marriage to gay and lesbian couples. The state House of Representatives adjourned without voting on the legislation, which had been approved by a Senate committee, though the Republican leadership had not scheduled a floor vote in that body. Tennessee's legislature is currently considering a similar bill. Four states, Florida, Mississippi, Utah, and Arkansas, currently have laws that prohibit adoption by same-gender couples. Florida's law also bans adoption by gay or lesbian individuals.
A bill banning cities and counties from creating domestic partner registries was defeated in an Arkansas State House committee this week by a simple voice vote. The bill reportedly targeted the city of Eureka Springs, which began issuing domestic partnership certificates to both same-gender and heterosexual couples in 2007. The bill's supporters said the registry is an attempt to circumvent the state's constitutional ban on same-gender marriage, but opponents said it would amount to the legislature meddling in local affairs.
A ballot measure in Gainesville, Florida, to repeal sexual orientation and gender identity anti-discrimination protections was soundly defeated this week, with 42% voting in favor and 58% against. The repeal effort began last year after the City Commission revised existing anti-discrimination laws to include protections for transgender people in employment, housing, and public accommodations. Opponents use scare tactics about mixed-sex public bathrooms to gather enough signatures to place a referendum on the ballot. Charter Amendment 1 would have eliminated not only transgender protections, but also those for gays and lesbians. It also would have prohibited the city from adding protected categories that are not included in the Florida Civil Rights Act, which does not recognize sexual orientation or gender identity. Gainesville is home to the University of Florida and is considered to be an LGBT-friendly city in the generally conservative northern part of the state.
And finally, LGBT people have been banned for years by its Roman Catholic organizers from marching as an identifiable unit in New York City's St. Patrick's Day parade. But a queer contingent had no problem making its first appearance in San Diego, California's parade on March 14th. About 25 people waving rainbow flags marched alongside a float topped by a giant bedazzled leprechaun. Republican Mayor Jerry Sanders, who emotionally spoke in favor of marriage equality last year for his lesbian daughter, served as executive grand marshal of the parade, organized by the Irish Congress of Southern California. The theme this year was celebrating children's services, with a specific focus on adoption, fostering, and mentoring. Ron DeHart, executive director of San Diego LGBT Pride, which organized the queer contingent, called it an excellent opportunity to carry Pride's message of equality and diversity to an audience outside the gayborhood. We were thrilled by the overwhelmingly positive reaction we received from the crowd.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 28, 2009. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Pleasant.
And I'm Lee Moore.
Mark your calendar for the Houston International Festival, coming your way April 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th. The 2009 festival will showcase Ireland and will feature performances by Los Lobos, Mavis Staples, Hugh Masekela, Ohio Players, Marsha Ball, Flaco Jimenez, Cherish the Ladies, and many, many more. Want more details? Go to ifest.org to see the complete schedule and purchase tickets. You can also sign up to volunteer for this fun-filled event at ifest.org. Don't miss the Houston International Festival April 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th. Go to ifest.org and get your tickets today. This is KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
And we're back.
Tonight, we're very honored to have not the owner and proprietor, but the founder of Houston Buyers Club. I had called you the owner and proprietor, but it's actually a non-profit organization. Welcome, Fred.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. B. And it's nice to be back in such lovely company.
Oh, thank you. He was talking to Jack.
We're right over his head.
He did. So, for our listeners that may not have any clue what the Houston Buyers Club is, what this wonderful resource in the community, please enlighten our listeners.
Well, thank you, Brian. A lot of people think that we're just that nutrition store in Montrose across the street from Half Price Books. But the truth is that we started out in my closet at home to serve people living with HIV by giving them nutritional supplements at cost, because back then we thought that higher nutrients would mean longer survival. And pretty soon we got so big that we had to come out of the closet and...
insert joke here. That's good.
It's always a crowd favorite. But anyway, we have since expanded to the general public, and we serve not just people with HIV, but people with diabetes, chronic fatigue, cancer side effects, gout, weight loss issues, weight
yes,
gain issues, things like that.
I don't have any problem with weight gain. It's the weight loss thing.
Yes.
And, you know, there's not really any magic pill for that. You really just have to eat every 2 to 3 hours under the care of a dietitian or doctor and do cardio 45 minutes to an hour.
A day?
Well, it depends on your metabolism.
I have a slow metabolism.
Maybe, I don't know, I'm just going to guess. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess maybe three to four times a week.
I hate cardio.
Well, you have to do it with Gloria Estefan, it's lots of fun.
You have to do cardio for 45 minutes every 2 to 3 hours.
But
I don't know. I wish there was a magic pill. I keep going to the Buyers Club and I keep looking for it. You know, you have many different things on the show, so I'm like, maybe this is the one.
We just got back from this huge education conference in Anaheim that they have every year, and there are 53,000 people that come from mostly all over the country, and all of Oprah's favorites are there, like Dr. Oz and Dr. Perricone and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we go to learn about new products and new research and things like that. But I actually got to meet Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR.
Oh,
and
okay.
He was coordinating this event about the future of the natural foods market. And he's just as funny, you know, on his heels as he is on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Quick-witted.
Yes, he's very quick-witted. He's very, very good. And at the end, at the end of the presentation he did, I went to buy his book for my boyfriend, who's quite the writer and quite the reader also.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my dear friends, Mark, who is the funniest person I've ever met in my whole entire life, he says, oh, you should ask him to go up and sign it. A dear future eBay purchaser. But I didn't. I choked.
That's funny.
So what's the news? What did he say?
Well, he didn't really say anything. He was just really the MC for like the representatives from Kashi, this co-op that actually grows the food naturally without any pesticides, and then a guy who owns a chain of grocery stores. It was just basically about the tug of war between the pharmaceuticals who are buying up all these natural foods type companies and the natural community. I mean, the natural foods community. So
mm-hmm.
It was just kind of there wasn't anything really of substance said. It was just more entertaining, I guess. But we did get a lot of information on vitamin D while we were there. And there just seems to be every month or every 2 months something new, a new study is coming out about vitamin D.
Tell us.
Well, I brought my notes so I wouldn't forget, but vitamin D, scientists think that they found a link between vitamin D and insulin levels. And they did a study with 524 kids with type 1 diabetes, and they found that kids who had higher levels of vitamin D when they were young developed or had less. They were less prone to develop type 2 diabetes early on. And one of the other thing that was interesting is the kids who drank more milk versus the kids who drank soda. So mm-hmm. That was really interesting. And then another large study linking higher amounts of vitamin D in men and women between the ages of 40 and 72 showed that they were 72% less likely to develop type 2 diabetes. Pain study. A study that, you know, a lot of diabetics get pain. And if your vitamin D levels are low, chances are you probably are going to have type 2 diabetes. Well, if you're already diabetic, you're probably going to have low vitamin D levels, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. The question, are they recommending that you get vitamin D from sunshine, which is supposed to be produced in the skin?
That's a very good question.
Or do supplements work better?
Well, it used to be that when we wore less clothes and we didn't wear sunscreen and we didn't wear hats, we got lots of vitamin D. But because of all that, we're getting a lot less, and it's having an impact on our bones and our immune systems.
Mm.
So scientists are saying, you know, at least 1,000 to 1,500 international units a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how much time in the sun would that be?
God, someone actually asked that question.
It wasn't me.
I can't remember. I think it was, most of your body. Say if you're in your boxers or if you were in shorts with your shirt off. I'm going to go out on a limb and say maybe 20 minutes.
Okay. Well, it was interesting when I was listening to you that when I was young, you know, I was running around without a shirt on in shorts from very young age up through last summer, and have always drank vitamin D fortified milk all my life. And I was wondering about that, other than the skin cancer.
Yeah, it's kind of like an offset, you know. You got vitamin D, no diabetes, but then you might have skin cancer.
Well, but I have diabetes in my family.
Oh, yeah.
I have to be real cautious about that.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to hear what you just said and sort of extrapolate back, well, maybe that's why I haven't had the onset of diabetes.
That's very interesting.
You're like a case study.
Maybe a case study, because my mom had it, and of course she grew up during the Depression years and all that, and they never, you know, very rarely did she ever get out in the sun.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Well, I think the Buyers Club is just this resource, this huge cornucopia of information, and I understand that this weekend you're having an open house.
We are. We're having a wonderful open house.
Is that a good segue or no?
It is. That's very sweet. Thank you so much.
We're here to get the word out. So this weekend.
Well, we got a lot of cool stuff. We now have a full-time registered dietitian on site, 40 hours a week. And we have a contract person that comes in part-time. Well, they'll be there to answer, like, short questions. So if you've ever been in a health food store and you had a question about a certain vitamin.
It's so overwhelming.
Oh, yes.
Like, you go into Whole Foods or something, and you're just like, oh, my God, what do I buy?
And, you know, we do a lot of referring back and forth, Whole Foods and Houston Buyers Club.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of friends there. Personal trainer will be there to give some guidance. We'll have our own chiropractor, Fernando Franco, will be there.
Fernando. You better be listening, Fernando.
He better be listening.
I know. They're going to be fired.
But the main draw is all of our vendors are going to be there giving away tons of free stuff.
So free stuff. Information and free stuff.
Information, free samples. And it's also one of our busiest days of the year. We're going to try to do this every quarter, but we have big sales, too.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, it's a lot of fun. We get swamped. I mean, and it's also, for those of you who are into pretty people watching, this is the place.
I don't know anyone that's into pretty people
watching. Only the dead. Question, and that when we're talking about these things, what about cholesterol? High cholesterol. Are supplements to... I mean, I know that I'm on a cholesterol medication now, but the doctor has supplemented it with large amounts of niacin.
Yes.
As a help, an aid to the function of the medication. And I was just wondering about that. I'm not going to pass up an opportunity to ask this question.
Sure. Can you say... Are you comfortable saying which drug you're on?
Simvastatin.
Okay. A lot of the statin drugs lower coenzyme Q10 levels in the body. So if you're on a cholesterol-lowering medication, many of them require that you take a coenzyme Q10 nutritional supplement. Regarding niacin, if you're on niacin, a new study came out last year, proving that the non-flush niacin does not work nearly as well as the flush kind. So if you go into a health food store and it says non-flush, it means you're not going to get that bee sting sensation or you're not going to get a flushed feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And while none of us want that, it's not going to work as well in your body.
Hmm.
So
interesting.
But yes, you have to start out with niacin at very low levels, like 50 to 100 milligrams.
Mm, I'm taking 500 milligrams.
Yes. Well, you're on about a medium dose. I have people that are taking 2,000 milligrams a day of that stuff.
Well, he wants to raise me up to 1,000 milligrams.
Yeah. Very good.
Only thing about it, we used to play tricks on our friends. We would slip niacin, you know, about 2,000 milligrams of niacin into a drink or something like that. And then they start scratching and itching,
yes,
and they get flush. And it wasn't very nice, but we were only kidding.
What a devilish little trick.
Well, it was just, you know, it wasn't going to hurt them. It would just make them itch like crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
Do I have time to tell you about a couple studies going on?
Oh, tell us.
Please do.
There's a really wonderful study being initiated by one of our mentors and friends who's a physician, Dr. John Kaiser. And what he's doing is, he's doing this in Canada because that's where the funding is. But they're doing a study comparing if your immune system is going to improve, whether or not you are either A, on a one-a-day multivitamin, B, on a placebo, or C, on a high dose pack, which means, which means you take, like, you know, four or five pills three times a day. So I mean, we already know that high doses of nutrients work to raise CD4 cells in HIV, but the fact that he's comparing it to a one a day versus a placebo versus, you know, a high nutrient one, because we still have a lot of clinicians, like, you know, doctors and dietitians, that are just still telling their patients, just go take a one a day. And that's not the answer. That's not what works.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate that my internist, who's my primary care physician, is very inclined to homeopathic remedies.
Oh, cool.
You know, I always like to say he doesn't always go directly to the pharmacological solution, mm-hmm. to a dietary or a supplement solution to it. He would rather recommend something that isn't pharmacological. And a lot of that has to do with he just seen that a lot of the natural remedies or supplements actually work better than some of the medications.
And, you know, we need to become more aware of that, and doctors need to rely more on that, because it has been suggested by founders of the industry that just like the stock market seized up and the banks have seized up, the healthcare industry is probably going to be next.
Which is very scary.
Yeah, and that's why we need to, you know, make more of this research more accessible and more well-known.
Are there any other things that you've, you know, supplements or all that's new and new and stuff we need to hear about?
Yes. Can I say hi to my friends at a local TV station?
Oh, sure. Go away.
Rosa Flores and Michelle Scarantino. One's a Channel 11 reporter, and the other is the photographer. And they've come out a couple times to do live broadcasts at 4:30 in the morning. Thank you very much.
Whoa, Lord. That's early.
And they did a story on acai. And that is that rage, you know, nutrient.
Say that again, because I've heard it hurt and pronounced.
Well, some people call it acai. Some people call it acai.
Well, I've heard about that. Isn't that the berry?
Yes.
The weight loss berry. I hear it all over the internet.
The chocolatey berry from Brazil.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Well, one thing I want to just tell people is, if you're going to do it, do the real thing. You know, there's actually companies out there that bottle just the actual fruit, the berry, and all they do is just grind it up and throw it in the bottle. And so one serving of just the natural juice, which, by the way, doesn't taste all that great.
No.
But if you dilute it in water, it's fine. It's 30,000 milligrams, and all the supplements on the shelf are 500 milligrams.
Right.
So you always want to try to do the liquid version.
Yeah.
That's one thing. And also, it's not a weekend solution for weight loss. You know, it's a supplement to weight loss. It's not the only thing that you do.
I see.
It's not the magic pill.
There is no magic pill.
What about this new, this super cleanse thing that everyone's doing all of a sudden?
What's it called?
The master cleanse.
Uber cleanse.
Where everyone is, you know, you drink the juice with the...
I do not endorse that.
It seems very kind of
It's hard. Very, very... people come in about once a month about that and have over the last 12 years. If you're going to do a cleanse, we encourage people to work with their dietitian, their registered dietitian, and do one of the cleanses that's on our shelves, because we've worked with them. We know, we have experience with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not going to be a cake spatula, you know, scraping the inside of your colon. That's not what it's going to do. It's going to help you stay regular, and it's going to, if there's anything, you know, a lot of times toxins get stored in fat cells, and it's going to hopefully help your body process that stuff out, as well as help you be more regular.
I got a question when you're talking about that. We're not talking about the colon cleanse, stuff like that, but all those things I've read, that we build up a lot of toxins in our system from our processed foods and our drinks and stuff like that that we'll take on a regular basis. And my coffee, he's pointing
in Starbucks.
But I save 250 calories. I don't have whipped cream on it. Which is really scary. What is there? Is there something that's in there that we can purge? So do you do to purge some of those toxins that are in our system? Or is that just something that has to be worked out over a long period of time?
There are some programs that you can buy. What it involves, it's almost like a fast. I mean, you eat snacks throughout the day and then one big meal, and you continue to exercise and go to work. I did that about 2 years ago, and it was really hard on me because my metabolism was so high, and I have to eat all the time. But, you know, I hate that too. you know, oh, let's get all the toxins out of our body. We'll name the toxins. Well, there there actually are some toxins, and it's the ones that we breathe. You know, the heavy metals that are in the air, especially in this city.
Right.
There's no pollution in Houston. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you know, and that's always been the concern, because there's a lot of side effects that have to do with the heavy metals that we ingest in our system. And that was the thing I was curious about. Is there anything to cleanse? I mean, yeah, we can all... We all cleanse ourselves. I was a bulimic, so I know what it is about cleansing.
Well,
purging.
I tell you, there's. I don't think it's just any one thing you do throughout the year. I really do believe that cleansing is part of, you know, taking a nutritional supplement that's meant to help you cleanse. But it's also, you know, doing the exercise and the cardio and the eating right. I think that's going to help too. I wish I was more articulate and more informative about that part of it. But
well, you've been very good.
I'm always amazed at how much you've kind of educated yourself and you become up to speed on all these things. And you become like a community resource. I mean, people come to you as... That it's very well known that you're the guy to talk to about all these different...
I do have something to tell you about that little sugary drink that might help you. I'm a big... You know, we kicked a certain water out of our store because of the fact that it had 35 grams of sugar in it. And most people thought that, you know, 35 grams of sugar, they didn't know that there was that much in there because they mislabeled the product. So we're big believers in stevia. It's a plant that grows all over the country, and manufacturers are harvesting it and, you know, grinding it up and brewing it and making these liquid sweeteners. And they have now come up with sodas flavored with stevia, and they taste really good.
I've seen
that advertised.
Fred, give us
our information one more time.
What's your website?
Houston Buyers Club.
Okay.
We're located across from Half Price Books near Montrose and Westheimer. Our phone number is, actually, how about our website?
Website's best way to go.
HoustonBuyersClub.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for being here.
Visit them. Thank you, Fred.
This is Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
provided to us by J.D. Doyle. That is a local artist, his name Alan Lett. The name of the song, Loud, and it's from a 2007 CD called A Moment Away. This is Queer Voices.
I just want to remind everybody that we are on Twitter, Queer Voices. We're on Facebook. Now, how do we find ourselves on Facebook?
You do a search under groups, Queer Voices, and there's a group for Queer Voices, and you can join. And what we have on there is the weekly lineup and information about the show. And there's also a message that goes out every Monday telling you what's going to be on that night's program.
And, of course, we have our website, queervoices.org. And we're also available if you can't stay up this late or you can't always catch the show on time.
Or you're at the Britney concert right now.
Yes, or at the Sioux Level, or is that still going on?
Nope.
No, okay.
It's shut down.
You can also catch the show on iTunes. You can subscribe to it, and you'll automatically get it usually on Tuesday, early Tuesday morning or sometime around there.
Sometime it just magically appears on my iPod, like on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Or if you really are low-tech, you can go to the website, kpft.org, and go to archives, and you'll have our show as well as everyone else's show in there. Just go to the time slot, Queer Voices, on Monday night, and you can listen to it or download it if you want to.
And if shows are saved about 60 days.
And if you're not lucky enough to live in Houston and you live in some other city in the country, you can listen to us live streamed on the website.
That's right. KPFT.org.
Yes. Tim Brookover's with us. Next week from Saturday is the quarterly, when I'm still saying, which because I'm so old-fashioned, that it's the Futures Conference. It's no longer called that. What is it called, Tim?
We've renamed it. It's the Community Leaders Networking Group.
And it is a long meeting, although it's not as long as some of the KPFT things that go on.
Those are always never
don't remind me.
nothing is that long. But and I don't always get to make them. I was at the last one, and I was very, very impressed because we did have a wide range of people representing the community. And that's the thing. You don't have to be an executive director or any, you know, you can just show up.
Right, exactly. I mean, we renamed the group the Community Leaders Networking Group, but we use the term leader very loosely. It's really, we stress more community. It did start out as the Futures Conference, a group that was following up on the Futures Conference, which was held, I guess it was, what, 2005 now?
I'm trying to remember.
It seems so long ago.
Yes.
The Conference on Houston's LGBTI Future. And it was the community center then started a group that met quarterly to follow up on the aspects of that conference. What we learned after a few meetings that the group was really evolving into a networking group for people in the community, people involved with community organizations, but then also some, you know, people who are just advocates or activists or interested people in the community who wanted to come and have a forum to share ideas, to talk, to gossip, to kvetch, to ask questions, just to compare notes, network, in other words. And we've been doing it running the group that way, I would say, for the past several quarterly meetings. We meet once a quarter now at the beginning of each quarter. We find that that's probably enough. Most everybody who's involved in the group is pretty busy, so even try to meet once a month is just a little bit too much. So,
and the format of the meeting is you don't have to be there for the full time.
You don't. Jack is correct. It can be a very long meeting. It starts at 1 in the afternoon and runs until 5, generally even later than that. But you don't have to come for the entire meeting. In fact, very few people do. And one of the reasons we have it for that span is to allow people to drop in and out. There are some people who can come early and chat or listen, then there are some people who can only come late, chat or listen, or maybe some people can only come from the middle part and decide to, you know, they've got other things to do. And we just want to encourage that. Now, one thing we're going to do this meeting, which, will, as you indicate, will be next Saturday at the Community Center, 1 to 5 in the afternoon, is we are going to build in some breaks so that there are specified parts where we just say, okay, we're going to stop talking and everybody can take a break so that nobody feels that they're missing anything because that, you know, that's a long afternoon. I mean, it's very valuable. I think people who participate really enjoy it.
Yes,
find
I got
it worthwhile.
You know, and it's hard to keep up with what's going on in the community since we don't have a weekly newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, there's stuff posted on the internet all over the place, but you sort of really get to hear people talk about what organizations they're involved in or not involved in,
right.
Or just some general discussion about the community in general,
right.
Which is really, I thought, very valuable.
I think so, too, and that is one of the reasons I think that we didn't plan it this way, but I think that's one of the reasons the group kind of developed into this networking group was because of the lack of a weekly newspaper, because the Montrose Voice isn't, the Houston Voice isn't around anymore. I was really showing my age there.
You could have said that the Montrose Star.
The Montrose Star. but it, because there's not a weekly forum for information, that a lot of people just don't pick up on what's going on, and even those of us who are involved in the community, and in part because we're all so darn busy, that we may not know what's going on with one another's organizations in the way we may have known before.
I attended it for the first time last quarter, and what I got out of it was the pooling of resources, because you have people that are involved in different circles and different organizations, and they have different skills and the ways they do things, and you can kind of, you know, use that in your own organization or vice versa. I think it's a very complimentary type meeting.
I agree, and I was really glad you came last time, Brian. And I think one thing that we also realize with this group is you really get a chance to see the incredibly talented group of people that we have in our community. I mean, we all know that there are a lot of talented people and dedicated people in the community, but then
and
to
some
get
special people
and some very special people and some
very vocal,
special for different reasons.
Yes,
but to get them all in one room talking and sharing ideas and you know comparing notes, it's, you know, it's really exciting. It can build a synergy, and one of the things that we've been able to do with the networking group is facilitate some collaborations between some organizations that might not have ordinarily work together, and it's just something that came up in the conversation among people. It isn't necessarily something that the community center intended to facilitate, but we were thrilled that it happened. You know, that people might say, "Well, I'm working on a, you know, program for seniors," and somebody else would say, "Well, you know, I'm working on a program for seniors." Well, why don't we work together on this program for seniors? And so, you know, so that's exciting. That's exciting to see, and we hope that as time goes on and more people attend and participate and hear about the group, that we can do even more of that, you know, helping the community grow in that way.
And what I like kind of in this age of internet where everything is online and electronic, it was just a face-to-face meeting and talking to people and just, you know, the personal interaction,
right,
that we are kind of going away from these days.
Right. It's amazing. People can get together and look at one another and talk to one another.
There's no webcam, no instant message.
Yeah, we're still very low tech at the community center, so don't have to worry about any webcams or, you know, any, you know, secret cams hidden anywhere.
Nobody's sending tweets on Twitter.
Unless you want to bring your own laptop and do that, we don't forbid it, but it's very low tech. It's a very low tech experience.
So, what is the goal of these meetings? Is it to discuss the future of the community? Is it, I mean, what is kind of...
The way it's developed is we just kind of let the group dictate where it wants to go, or the people who participate dictate where the meeting goes. And there, I don't really think that there is necessarily a long-term goal, except in a sense that it grows out of the community center's mission, which is to... encourage the growth of our organizations and our community. So that's certainly, you know, that's certainly a goal there. But there's sort of no end goal that we have, that, you know, this is going to happen and this is going to happen and then boom, you know, we have a result. I mean, very early on, at the suggestion of Ray Hill, which was a great suggestion. He said it's, you know, make it very horizontal, no officers. We have no new structure. We're not starting a new organization. And everybody in the meeting is equal. You know, there's, I mean, I sort of act as the facilitator.
And you do a very good job of that. You make sure that everybody gets a chance to talk and
get the conversation started, but there's no president or chair.
There is, I mean, Ray Hill is president. Hello. I mean, gosh.
Well, whenever Ray shows up in a room, Ray is Ray.
Ray is,
and
yes.
We're always happy to have Ray there. The other thing that's nice, I think that's nice about the networking group is that there are very few opportunities in our community, and probably any community, for people to get together for an event where, or for a meeting that isn't also an event. There's no, we're not raising money.
I know.
We're not trying to elect someone to something. We're not, you know, listening to a speaker. I mean, all those are worthy things, and we all know that they're important, particularly raising money. But this isn't one. But this is kind of an opportunity that we can get together and let our hair down, if you will, and not have to do any of those things. And then later on, you know, we will have to go back to raising money and attending dinners and listening to speakers. And
absolutely, I'm so like kind of out of my element because I'm used to what are we working? You know, what are we raising money for? What are the beneficiaries?
Right. And all that's really important, and that's something that also is always discussed at the meeting. You know, because everyone who's in the almost everyone who's attends the networking group is involved with an organization or employed by an organization that raises money in our community. And that's incredibly important. And so we're always talking about that. And that's always a subject. How do you raise money, you know, even before the economy started tanking, and then attracting and keeping volunteers? That's something that's always talked about, and that, you know, no one's come up with a grand solution yet, but we'll keep working.
Well, and another thing I think that you talk about, you know, this may not necessarily be a topic, but it comes out there, is that, you know, are these organizations still relevant in the way the community is changing? And, in fact, the community is changing.
That's a very good point.
We were never, you know, totally Montrose-based, but most organizations meet in the Montrose or have their events in the Montrose, but now so even more so that we are spread out all over the city, and people don't feel the need so much to have to come into the Montrose, although the community center is almost at ground zero, as we say, Montrose and Westheimer intersection.
Well, and that's, you know, that's a very good point, Jack, and that's something that I think we've grappled with at some of the networking group meetings, and certainly I've thought about a lot, and I know other people have, and you and I've had this conversation before, and others have as well. Our community is going through, I think, a sea change, and probably a lot of communities of minority culture communities are, and we don't know what it's going to look like on the other side. Or when we'll even get there, but I think not all of our organizations and institutions are going to make it.
And not all of them actually need to make it.
And not all of them need to make it.
Because things have changed.
And, you know, many of us are very attached to the organizations we're involved in, and I certainly am one of those people. But, you know, things are changing, and, things are changing quickly, and we've already lost, you know, just within the last few years, a number of organizations that were very important to the community, and a number of very big fundraisers that were very important to the community. And some other things have come up to take their place, but not in all cases. So that's something also that we've talked about. That's been a topic of some discussion, although it's scary to talk about, because all of us who are involved are also participating in these organizations, and you know, nobody wants to say, well, my organization may not be around next year, but it's I think it's a big, you know, it's a big concern.
Okay, so let's give the information out again.
It's the Community Leaders Networking Group. It's a program of the Houston GLBT Community Center. The next meeting is next Saturday.
A week from Saturday.
A week from Saturday, so it's not the Saturday coming up, but a week from Saturday.
That would be April 11th.
Saturday, is that the 11th?
Yes.
Yeah, the second Saturday. Thank you. And it's from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Community Center. 3400 Montrose Boulevard, Suite 207, which is on the second floor. The 3400 Montrose building is the building with Skybar on the top.
Next to the Disco Kroger.
Next to Disco Kroger and across from Starbucks. And as Jack pointed out, you don't have to come for the entire time. We certainly welcome you to come for the entire time if you like. But 4 hours is a long meeting. So if you want to come in and stop by and say your piece or just listen or come in late, that's perfectly acceptable.
And there's parking in the building.
Parking is in the building.
Off
of Hawthorne. There's the garage is adjacent to the building. And certainly during the day on Saturday, it's free. There won't be an attendant there, so you're free to park there. And just come in through the garage, and we're on the second floor, and we would welcome you to participate. Last meeting, we had our largest group ever. I think we had 13 people. So that was good. In fact, that was one of the things that prompted us to say we need to build in some breaks, because if we have the larger group than we've had before, we need to be a little bit more accommodating. But we certainly would love to see more people. We know everybody can't participate every time because there's too much to do in too little time. But we're there the first quarter of every month, and hope this group will continue to grow and provide a forum for people to come and talk informally. It's very informal.
Great. Tim Brookover is with the Houston GLBT Community Center, and he's talking about the Community Leaders Forum that's happening on April 11th. If you'd like more information, you can go to the website of the Community Center, which is
Houston, www.HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Everybody's a hopeful in this city of talent and time. High on determination to live it out. Everybody's distracted when they dance with one eye on the door. So afraid to be missing the next best thing. There's something more. All these days are not how we dreamed they would be. And those we love are not who we thought we would see. And no one here can remember the name of his hometown or where it came from. There's not much here, so we can give it. And run. So announce your departure and settle the debts that you owe. 'Cause they know that we're leaving and won't be back. We'll find a home. Days are not how we dreamed they would be. Those we love are not who we thought we would see. No one here can remember the name of his hometown or where it came from. There's not much here, so we can give it up and run. It was, but it wasn't, and it does, but it doesn't make this place the home I need. Whoa, these days are not how we dreamed they would be. And those we love are not who
Phil Putnam from 2007 and his album Best of Intentions, the title of the track, Not Much Here. This is Queer Voices.
I think in Houston we're blessed to have many nonprofit organizations that do a variety of good things for our community. But there is a new one that has recently formed, and a friend of mine, Bo Miller, is the founder. Welcome, Bo.
Thank you, Brian.
What is the name of this organization?
It's called Live Consortium.
Live Consortium. And tell us a little bit about that. What was the idea, and what is the mission statement of Live Consortium?
Well, as you know, we work together at the CFA.
You gotta say, what is the CFA?
The Center for AIDS.
Okay, yes.
We spent a year together on the board, and I did a lot of introspective thinking about myself and why the new numbers came out as far as HIV infections in Houston, and it's twice the national average, in my own life. And I thought we needed to fill a gap in Houston, which is just to fight stigma and get the word out that HIV is no longer just a gay disease, it's gay and straight. So we are here to fight stigma and help facilitate the organizations like the Center for AIDS or Legacy or St. Hope do what they do best.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of it. I know one of the fastest growing segments of the with people HIV are black women. And, you know, it still has the stigma of just being a gay disease. And it hasn't been that way for a long time.
Well, and the numbers are getting even worse. And I think we're going to find in 2 years, and I'm not an expert on this. I'm a lawyer by trade most of the time when I'm not doing Live Consortium business now. But it's just going to get worse unless we do something
That's
radical
right.
to fight it. And so what Live is really meant to do is put a new image of health and identity and vitality so people can see that if you do treat it right, if you do get your medications, if you do get tested, you can live a healthy and full life. It's a different healthy and full life, but if you just ignore it or are complacent, then that opportunity doesn't avail itself to you. So we have a new logo, a diver who's very healthy and strong.
And is there a website?
It's liveconsortium.org or anti-stigma.org or lwhiv.org. We're only 3 months old, but we have 3 websites. They all go to the same one.
I see. So what are some, do you have events coming up or things in the past that you could talk about?
Our first event was called Slate, which was a HIV-affected seminar. It is a big event that Dr. Shannon Schrader and Nelson Virgil gave on an HIV update. We had about 160 people attend. Most of them were probably HIV positive. And the idea is to break the stigma and be able to talk about that so people can talk to their friends and not hide behind their illness and think that we're all perfect. And then we did the University of Houston anti-stigma campaign, which for a month we educated the University of Houston audience about stigma, what is stigma, why it negatively affects our community, and then HIV, the real numbers. Half of the new infections in the United States are in the age group of 15 to 24-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty scary.
So we were able to go to the Greek system. We were able to talk to students individually. We tested about 60 people in 4 hours. We don't do testing. But Legacy and HACS and the NAACP all came in and did that. Again, we help facilitate others to do what they do best.
How was the Anti-Stigma Day received at the University of Houston? I mean, what was the reception and how did the students react?
Overwhelmingly great. I think... Mr. Robinson, who oversees their Center for Health, does an excellent job of making HIV awareness and testing. A lot of the students had been tested recently. We have a shirt, which I brought both of you one. It's an anti-stigma shirt.
For all of you out there, you can just see it.
it might be available at the Buyers Club pretty soon.
But boy, you're merchandising and get the word out here.
We made some money at the AIDS Walk with the shirt. Anyway, by giving away free shirts and free lunches, we learned that students are attracted to that, and we could then pull them aside, talk to them individually, and educate them, and also get them tested. We also had crew, the fitness gym was there, doing health evaluations. Southside Pharmacy did health screenings as well. And the idea is the HIV test is just another thing that you should do regularly. It's not something that you need to be scared about. It's not something that you need to hide behind. But if we make it part of the routine, then an accepted routine, then it'll become more practiced, hopefully.
What is kind of your metrics? I mean, how do you measure your success? I mean, it's kind of a very nebulous thing, you know, the stigma. And how do you know that you're making progress with your organization? I mean,
well, since we're only 3 months old, I think it's the people that are attracted to helping us. But when I talk to people and people come talk to me, and they like the idea that we're getting past that barrier of isolation. Back in the 80s and 90s, as we know and pay tribute to Joel Martinez and the great leaders in Houston, people were attracted to, like, the Center for AIDS, because that's how they would survive. If they didn't go to the center, they wouldn't get the information. The internet, as great as it is, has isolated people, and people go into their own little cliques, and we need to get over that barrier, bring people together, because once you identify with somebody that has HIV, or in fact, there's a lot of stigmas that positive people have against negative people, I hear. So the idea is that we're all human. We all have health issues. No one's perfect. No one's superhuman. And if we can create a social, loving, compassionate society, then I know I live better, and I'm healthier that way.
And do you have any fundraising events coming up that you would like to let our listeners know about?
Yes, we've been very fortunate. We have a great team of people behind us. We just finished something at Saks Fifth Avenue and Karen Durr, and we're going to start something hopefully once a month on Thursday, a social networking, and this is the perfect time to do it in a troubled economy where people need a network for people that have the jobs to give, with people that are looking for jobs to fill. So at Belvedere, on April 16th from 6:30 to 8:30, there will be a donation at the door, and they're offering a free frozen drink per person, plus there will be appetizers there. And
that's wonderful.
Food and drink.
Yeah.
Food and that's the magnetism that gets people to show up. Yeah.
Exactly.
For a donation, is that what it's...
We would like a donation at the door. It would be nice to... We need a little operating capital to
I understand.
To do another anti-stigma day, hopefully at TSU, and to get our message out. But the most important thing is for people to come and congregate and get to know each other, get to know what LIV is, and find out how they can participate, volunteer.
Now, where is Belvedere for our listeners that may not know?
It's an uptown park.
Okay.
Which I didn't know exactly where Uptown Park was.
Yeah, it's somewhere like near the Loop and kind of away from here and kind of out of my comfort zone. But I've been there actually, and it's a very nice place.
It's my part of town.
It's a very nice park.
Yes. It's very swanky.
It is.
Oh yes, very nice.
It's very cool.
It's right there. It's right near the Galleria, just north of the Galleria on Post Oak, and so this is how you would get there, Post Oak and 610. So it's not so bad.
And so you mentioned having another anti-stigma day. So this may be a series of kind of events to raise awareness.
Yes, we would like to take this model and sort of more or less perfect it and be able to fight any stigma, really. If we were a rock band, HIV is our top hit, because that's what's affecting our community the most right now. But in future years, it might be diabetes, it might be something else. So we're trying to get this model that we can take to colleges and universities, starting here in Houston, then going across the country and saying, here's a model that's been successful, and implement that. So we would like to do TSU. We'd like to do University of Houston again if they'll have us back, Rice or wherever. But yeah, it's not just awareness though. It's awareness. It's testing. It's a whole health idea.
Now, are there peer organizations around the country that do this, or kind of
not that
trailblazer?
Not that we know of. There are a lot. Stigma is a real big buzzword this year, and I can't take credit for it this year because Obama's used it and Hillary Clinton's used it. But my idea started back on a flight to Europe in Thanksgiving. But I think we're all stigmatized by lots of different things. And I think with Obama's president, this might be the time that we can actually come and face some of those stigmas and have more of an open era of communication and caring. So as far as I know, Brian, yes, this is the first that it's been done, and if there are others that have done it, let me know so we can
send you an email and let you know.
Exactly, we can learn.
Y'all can share notes.
Or engage in a lawsuit because you're stealing their idea. Mr. Lawyer, no.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, but I think it's, you know, all great nonprofits kind of start with an idea, and I think this is a great idea to get going.
An idea and passion.
And, you know, it's not easy to start a nonprofit, so I applaud you for that.
Oh, my goodness, if I knew what I knew now. And it's really awesome to be the founder and have people believe in what needs to happen.
You know, and it's amazing that we've lived with HIV/AIDS for going on 30 plus years, you know, some say longer, and there's still a stigma for people that become positive. I mean, even today.
Well, you're right, and that's I'm positive and now openly positive. And this live is sort of the history of my life and coming to terms with my status. And when I'll just tell this brief story if I have time.
Go ahead.
When I found out, I pulled five of my closest friends together and cooked them a steak dinner and told them. And then I said, you know, don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
You know, which is
because
know,
of the stigma behind it.
Because,
yeah, absolutely.
Right. It took a lot for me to tell them, but then I'm not, you know, you be there for me, but you don't you dare go tell anybody else. And that's probably one of the, I've done a lot of selfish things in my lifetime, and I'm sorry for those things, but that was probably the most selfish thing. And so I'm trying to create that compassionate society in which your friends can tell your friends, and that's one of the biggest things about the anti-stigma campaign. And there are a lot of misconceptions out there. One pill a day treatments, that there's a vaccine or cure on the way, that it's, you know, the reality is HIV is here. It's here to stay for a while. Most people in Houston present full-blown AIDS, and we can stop all that. But it's a different life on meds, and I start my meds next week.
Yeah, well, one of the things you talk about, even though there's still that stigma, there is the fact that it's come a long way. I remember when, about 1988, I never worried about AIDS or catching anything when I was out there drinking and drugging. Okay, y'all that don't know, I'm now clean and sober for 21 years.
Applause.
Yes, applause, hey. But the fact is, though, when I got clean and sober, I went to my doctor and I wanted an AIDS test. I wanted to see how much damage I'd done, and I paid cash. And it was done as a separate item, all under the table, very secretive. So, because if it was positive, you didn't want anybody to know about it.
Well,
it's come a long way since then.
And at that point, it was mostly a death sentence.
Oh yeah, it was a death sentence then.
We become more of a manageable disease, but still, it is a virus, and you know it can mutate at any time.
Well, there was a stigma around cancer for many years, and
right.
Some segments of our society thought they were being punished for their sins.
Right.
And you know, there's a lot of idiocy out there and a lot of ignorance, and only information from organizations like yours making a difference.
Well, Bo, we appreciate you coming out, and even more, we appreciate you founding this nonprofit that's for a very worthy and valid cause in our community and maybe around the country and around the world. So we appreciate it. The website again.
LiveConsortium, CONSORTIUM.org. LiveConsortium.org.
Or anti-stigma.org.
Or LWHIV.org.
Go to those websites and get some more information.
Thank you. This is Queer Voices.
And before we go to This Way Out and audio file with J.D. Doyle, I need to explain that we do have a technical problem, and we're only able to play back through the right channel with this program. So that's going to rather limit what we can do with the music playback. The music is going to sound really strange coming through only the right channel. And we apologize for that, but there's nothing we can do about it at the moment. So anyway, here goes.
If you're weightless and in pursuit, maybe you should hide nothing. Those are this month's musical offerings in the audio file. But first, Minneapolis, Minnesota-based writer and activist Ari Sands has had to confront the question, I know you are, but what am I? That's the title of her as yet unpublished memoir about life as the partner of a transitioning trans man. Sands talks about her project with This Way Out correspondent Dixie Trichel.
Ailey, why did you write the book?
The book was born of my experience as my partner transitioned from female to male over the last 3 years. Probably a year and a half into this process, realizing that there were no resources whatsoever for me or for any other partner of a trans person, and how many people approached me to hear what I had written or for me to share with their group, made me realize that it would really benefit the rest of the community if I were to publish this journal and make it into a memoir. And so there was a point where I made a shift that I realized what I was writing was more than just for my own use with Reese, and that it was going to be read by other people.
Do you still see that it will finish as a memoir?
I do believe it's going to be under the memoir genre, although it could also be sold as a GLBT issues book.
Mm-hmm. For educational purposes?
Correct. And I would really love for the book to be part of the syllabus for gender studies programs all over in the United States at different universities and colleges.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be very beneficial for people learning about gender issues to also learn about the issues of the partner.
And you're currently looking for a publisher?
I am. I'm seeking an agent and a publisher.
How did you feel when your partner came out as transgender?
You know, it wasn't so much of a surprise, because when Reese and I were first together, we communicated as though we were in a traditional male-female relationship. He had a lot of masculine energy, even though he was female-bodied, and I responded to that energy in my femininity. So it wasn't entirely a surprise. I didn't know at the time what the extent of the label transgender would mean, and I didn't know what that included. I was on the road to a lot of education. I was also extremely relieved for him. I knew while we were dating as two female-bodied people that there was a lot of anxiety around his identity for his gender, and that he was very uncomfortable in the world as he was. However, through this process, I have learned a lot about myself and have come to comfort, I will say, with the term queer. Because it is very difficult to put a boundary around someone who's been partnered with the same individual when they were female-bodied, transitional, and then male-bodied.
Tell us about your personal process.
One of the things that I think is really difficult about being the partner of a transgender person who's transitioning is that the grief is so intangible. It is such a loss that can't be named, or it's just a really difficult thing to bring to words. How do I say what I've lost in this transition from the time he was female to the time he was male in the parts of his personality that have been changed? And I do touch on that quite a bit in my writings. I've been experiencing a lot of surprise, because I wasn't expecting, like I said, so many personality changes in Reese throughout this transition. The grief is very insidious and comes up when I least expect it. And how it comes is that there will be these small changes that are happening all the time throughout our relationship. We're living our life day to day. And then I'll realize one day, I'll be conscious of my awareness and say, wow, this is an aspect of his personality that has definitely changed, and I haven't realized it until today. And then with that, I have to learn how to accommodate or adjust to that in our relationship. I mean, I'm still learning, and also just being honest with myself about my pain. For so long, I was trying to suppress what I was feeling so as not to inhibit his process. And I realized maybe halfway through the three-year period of the bulk of his transition is that that wasn't doing either of us any good, because I was stuffing so many feelings about the loss that I had experienced. And I am just trying really hard to, I will just say, catch up to his transition. I've spoken and taught seminars at different transgender events, and there have been partners there that have been so timid about speaking about their experience, their anger, their pain, their confusion. And when they do finally start speaking, it's extremely raw and painful stuff that they're talking about, because they haven't had any place else to talk about this, and it's a topic that isn't considered normal in our society. It's a very difficult thing to survive in a relationship like this from the time before the transition till afterwards without having your own issues.
Are there support groups or clubs with other partners of transitioning folk that you can talk to?
There are very little resources for partners of transgender or genderqueer individuals. There are some online chat groups that did not fit the needs that I had, mm-hmm. as far as the depth that I wanted to go in this process. Slowly, we were able to gain a community of our own in the transgender, genderqueer community. And within that community, I have found some people, specifically some women that are partnered with trans men, that are my best resource of people to talk to. However, I did not find support groups. I did not find publication. I did not find online information about this intangible grief that is real and experienced by many people in this process. And there was just nothing there for me. So that's why I continued to write this book.
Allie Sands is seeking a publisher for her memoir, I Know You Are, But What Am I? In the meantime, she's available to speak at educational and transgender events and can be reached at alishans@yahoo.com. That's alishands@yahoo.com. She was interviewed by Dixie Trichel.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, Noah in the Noah's Ark movie and TV series. And you've discovered This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle. You'll hear my voice during the monthly audiophile music feature on This Way Out. But I'm here now to ask for your support of this one-of-a-kind radio show. We know times are tough these days. We have one part-time paid staff person at This Way Out who does all the production and administrative work to bring you our half-hour international radio show every week. The rest of us are unpaid volunteers. Everyone here does it for love. Certainly not for financial gain. You can't put a monetary value on this program, whether it's in dollars, euros, or yen. We think This Way Out offers a priceless, sometimes even life-saving voice heard around the world, celebrating the rich diversity of LGBT experience. Please log on to our website to see how you could help keep us going. Whatever you can offer will be put to good use and truly appreciated. Read all about it at www.thiswayout.org. That's www.thiswayout.org. And thank you.
Sing if you're happy this way.
A solo debut and a real-life duo with solo CDs. Tune up this edition of The Audiophile.
Mm-hmm.
on the ground or in the sky? What does it matter when you're singing to no one? But you were holding your breath like a good little boy, saving it all.
The first album by Matt Albert is called Hide Nothing. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. On the heels of spending several years with the Grammy-winning classical a cappella ensemble Chanticleer, Matt is on his own, and his music and first video are bringing rave reviews.
Well, Hide Nothing is the name of my first album. I'm releasing it with Tommy Boy Silver Label in New York. And it's really my first collection of songs. I produced this album at home with a good friend of mine, Jeff Creary. And this is a self-produced album of romantic, acoustic, and orchestral sounds. And I'm really pleased to be releasing it with Tommy Boy.
More about Matt Albert's album Hide Nothing at www.mattalbert.com, and Albert is spelled A-L-B-E-R.
Yeah, dreamt about you last night while you were lying next to me. You were in a car in Baltimore, and you looked so happy to see me, yeah.
Last month on Audiophile, we featured the duo of life partners Jason and DeMarco. This month, we present another pair, Tessa Perry and Liz Clark, although this time as solo artists with separate careers.
Tessa Perry was raised in Ireland, where her first album was released. But her latest, called Weightless, was recorded in the States and captures many of the songs that got her attention in both countries.
So the new album is songs that I have been writing for the last 10 or 12 years, and I just wanted to put them down on an album and be done with them. It's a very folksy album that I'm really proud of, and it's about coming of age and being great.
Yeah, she lives just across the street. I look, but we rarely meet, just to pass the time of day, which is hers, and the night it is mine. Oh, I wish I could be brave sometimes.
You can get more information about the album Weightless at www.tessaperry.com. That's www.tessaperry.com.
The second half of this month's musical partners is Liz Clark, who has just released her third album. It's called Pursuit.
Being partnered with Tessa Perry, Liz Clark is able to split her touring schedule between the U.S. and Ireland, and to pursue a career in both countries.
I named this album Pursuit because I had come to a point in my life where I was in pursuit of love. I was in pursuit of finding myself. I was in pursuit of getting the career I wanted in music. And I realized that when I was faced with that, that it was really quite scary.
Find out more about the CD Pursuit by Liz Clark at www.lizclarkmusic.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at 594 Sawdust Road, number 273, Spring, Texas, 77380, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Lee Moore, Michelle Pleasant, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Dixie Trykle, Daryl Stevens, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Matt Albert, Tess Perry, and Liz Clark performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KZYX and Z, Philo, Willits, Ukiah, and Fort Bragg, California, MVS Radio, Amsterdam, the Netherlands, WNRB, Wausau, Wisconsin, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Attention high school seniors. The Tagore Society of Houston is accepting entries for its $1,000 scholarship essay contest. Applicants are to write an essay of 1,000 words based on a quote by inspirational Indian poet, philosopher, and Nobel laureate Rabindranath Tagore. Essays will be judged by an elite panel of local authors. All entries must be received electronically by May 8th. Students are encouraged to visit our website at www.tagoresociety.org for instructions. That's www.tagoresociety.org. You are tuned in to Commercial Free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.